Welcome to Tez Talks Radio. I'm your host, Marissa True, and today I am joined by Victoria West, an activist, storyteller, photographer, and host of fellow Tezos ecosystem show, Tez Talk. So hi, Victoria, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's been a long time coming and very happy to have you here. I think I'd really like to start with a venture into your background. And I know, you know, you're very multifaceted. As I mentioned, you are activist, storyteller, photographer, artist. Can you talk to me first about your artistic journey?
Sure. I have been a portrait photographer for my entire adult life, I guess, since I started when I was like 25. I'm in my early 40s now, and I run a studio. So that's how I make a living, taking pretty pictures of people. And on the side, I was making art. And that's kind of how I ended up here, because of the art side of things. But, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, when you say, you know, that's what brought you into the fold, how did the journey as an artist bridge into blockchain? What was it that made you think, oh, this is where I need to be?
So I live on the East Coast of Canada in this really small town. So my artwork, which tends to be, it's not all political, but it's all intense. It's not riverscapes and, you know, florals. And that's what people want here. So I was just really making my art for me. I'd put it in photography competitions. I did really well in those. But initially the goal was, okay, I'll just get photographer famous and then I'll be able to sell the photographer's workshops. And it started working. Like, I started getting well known and people were asking me to speak and teach. And I realized I don't like teaching. I would rather just continue doing headshots and personal portraits than I would want to make a workshop. Like, I like people, but I don't like, hearing myself. Like, I had to record myself a whole bunch of times for workshops, and then I had to like listen to myself speak for, you know, hours on end, and I felt like it was a form of torture. So at that point, I didn't know what I was going to do. I really did not see any potential for selling my artwork, because here there just isn't, you know, there is no galleries here that are interested in anything even remotely like mine. I knew that there was places, you know, in other locations, but like, I'm older, I'm settled, I have responsibilities, I have a business. I can't just like pick up and move to go chase a dream that might not happen. So when I was in Clubhouse and I started listening to these rooms where people were talking about NFTs and art and everything that goes with that, I thought, maybe there are people here who might like my art. And that's kind of where it started. It's evolved into much more than that. The things that have happened subsequently to entering this space have just been, when you really sit and think about it, it's like mind boggling, you know, but I feel like all of us, we feel like this stuff is normal, and we have to remind ourselves, this is not normal. It's not normal to be, putting on events in New York. It's not normal to have your work exhibited all over the world, in Paris and, you know, Rome. Like, none of this is normal, but it's become normal, which is pretty amazing.
So it sounds like when you were really sort of discovering your artistic voice, you just found that it just didn't resonate with your immediate local, I guess, physical community, which is where you sort of sought out an alternative community elsewhere, and that happened to be online. And when you were on Clubhouse and they were having these discussions around NFTs, was there like a eureka moment where it all just kind of clicked and you went, that's it, that's where I need to try this?
Yeah, I feel like I got pretty obsessed as soon as I heard this idea of, especially as a photographer, you know, unlike a painter or an artist who creates with something physical, we're kind of in this like middle zone where we are doing physical things. You know, it's not just at a computer, but it is digitally native. So we don't have like an original per se. So this idea of being able to like mint the original and say, this is the original, was super interesting to me. understood like the value in that. I also felt like the potential, you know, longevity and like legacy of it was really important. You know, as a portrait photographer specifically in my own life and with all of my clients, you know, I have like a very firsthand experience on how like valuable that becomes down the road. So yeah, I loved all of the tech around it and what that could mean for photography and, you know, other art forms as well.
Yeah, I think it was super interesting because it really raised the profile of understanding principles of value as it related to something like digital art, where conceptually we all understand it, but then when it was starting to it was being implemented in practice in terms of actually attributing a dollar or a cryptocurrency value to a digital piece, that's when people went, whoa, 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 this feels a little bit different. And that was a huge learning curve for so many people. But obviously one of the places where it really kicked off was the Tezos community. So how did you actually come to discover Tezos specifically, and what was the thing that kind of really pulled you down this specific rabbit hole?
So I remember the first clubhouse room I was in where they were onboarding people. So people were minting their first pieces, and they were doing it on ETH on a platform called Mintable, which was like lazy minting. So you didn't have to pay. And I'm like, oh, there are places you don't have to pay. Okay. And then I did that, but then I realized like nobody cares about Mintable and this site sucks. So I was like, I was very much holding back because on ETH, it was so expensive at the time, like hundreds of dollars to mint a piece. And this was all an experiment, especially in the beginning. Like I had no idea if anybody would care what I put out or buy it. And then there were a couple of guys who had the Tez Fountain. Mm-hmm. I forget what it's called, but anyway, you could just literally connect through Kukai on Twitter and they would give you a few Tez, and they were like, oh yeah, you can mint whatever you want on Hikignunk. I'm like, oh, okay. So I did. And then found out there was another platform that I thought was curated at the time. It wasn't, but anyway. So I ended up minting a piece because also it was about the environment, and I just felt like it'd be very hypocritical to put it on ETH. So I did that, and I remember I listed it at, I think it was only like maybe 385 Tez, but at the time Tez was like maybe like $8 or something, and everybody was like, oh, you minted and listed it that expensive on Tezos? I'm like, I don't understand why it would be any different here than anywhere else. People were shocked. It sold. And at the same time, I was getting banned on Foundation. So I had gotten on Foundation. They censored some of my artwork. They banned it. Then they reinstated it after the community freaked out. But like, you know, I'm a little petty. Like I hold a grudge. I wasn't happy with that. I didn't want to give them any more of my money. So I ended up really solely on Tezos for pretty much like the first 4 months, 4 to 5 months in the space. And I was running clubhouse rooms, so doing a lot of community building. I was pretty involved with, you know, like working with Calamint, which was the platform, that I thought was curated. You know, I was minting on Hikignunk too, but I was worried about Hikignunk going down. I mean, I didn't know what would happen after. It all worked out fine, but like, I didn't know. And yeah, just through that, it kind of was an accident. Tezos just made sense to me. I'm like, I like using it. I like buying things here. I mean, I remember initially thinking people are buying these NFTs. They're out of their minds, but like buy mine. But then I ended up, you know, collecting like thousands of them, and just getting completely addicted. So yeah, I mean, I don't really collect art on ETH because it's just too expensive. Like, it's just too expensive for me to be able to do. So, yeah, I just stayed on Tezos because it made sense.
It sounds like a lot of people have had somewhat of a similar journey in terms of Hikit Nunc has been their gateway. And I think it's interesting because in the broader, I guess, blockchain landscape, people are always asking, you know, what is it that's going to attract the end user? And everyone always thinks, oh, let's talk about tokenomics. Let's talk about the fundamentals of the chain itself. Or, you know, what is the killer dApp that's going to change the game for everybody? But realizing that like something that was sort of homegrown, something that was community driven and community led, was really the thing that pulled just so many artists into this ecosystem. And I think the pricing comment is very, very interesting because that was initially one of the major debates. It's to benchmark the value of the art relative to the chain that it was minted on. And that seems counterintuitive because it's to completely dilute or to dismiss the value of the work itself. So I love that when you minted your work, you were bold and you priced it exactly how you felt it should be priced. But talk me through sort of, you know, the discussions that you were having with others or with yourself about wrestling that negotiation between what art or how art should be valued in across different communities or how it should be appraised across different communities.
I guess at the time, and still to this day, obviously it's hard to keep your work completely on par based on, you know, coins moving up and down and whatever. But I've always tried to keep things, relatively the same across chain. I think the thing with Tezos was it gave me more freedom. So like I could make my royalty higher to make up. And so, you know, price a little bit lower, put a higher royalty, knowing I'm going to have secondary sales, which there actually was a secondary market, like on additions, which is not true for, you know, I don't know if it's even true now on any other chain. Like, I don't know. I don't hear about it, but I can't really speak too much to some of the L2s, but definitely not on E. I was able to, you know, make additions and no, you couldn't do additions on ETH. Like there was a lot of ways to kind of play with it, but I always kept my pricing consistent. You know, in my background, I used to do a lot of teaching on pricing photography. Like that was something that I was constantly teaching and trying to get photographers to value their work and, you know, understand what's sustainable. And when I'm pricing, it's not about my feelings. It's about what makes sense. It always just makes sense to me. You know, like a lot of artists are like, oh, you're really expensive. And I'm just like, you're never going to be able to live on what you're selling these for, which is fine if you just want to do it as a hobby. But like, that's just how I think about things. So people question me all the time on it, or used to. And yeah, I just always kind of said the same thing. So I just price based on what made sense financially. Do the numbers. I did the numbers.
I think that's something that often people overlook. I think because art is often seen as like a lot of it can be very ego driven. So you would want the price that you feel you deserve for the piece that you've put out. But again, there's a lot of emotionality in there, not necessarily business sense, because art and business are diametrically opposed in so many different ways. So I can understand the challenge or like what people are wrestling with when they try to price their work. But to go back a step, you mentioned that you were banned off a foundation and eventually reinstated, but can you tell me that story and what exactly happened there?
I had, I'd waited for maybe a month and a half to get my exclusive invite to foundation, because that's what it was at the time. You had to get invited by somebody. So I finally got it. I was very excited. And a friend of mine recommended that I wait till gas was low, you know, like only like $200, and mint a few pieces so collectors could kind of see what was going to come. Not list them, but just have them there. It was a terrible idea in, you know, hindsight, but whatever. I was a baby. I knew nothing. So I did that. I think I put four pieces up and then I listed one of them. Two of the pieces were animal rights messaging. So one of them was like women in a slaughter truck and they're being driven by an alien. And like on the side of the truck, it says Martian and Sons quality meats. So the idea being like put the humans in the place of the animals and put aliens in the place of humans. And, you know, like, how do you like it? Kind of thing. It didn't like show anything. The women were nude, but like, I'm always super careful not to show anything that would get me like Facebook in trouble. So this had been on Facebook and Instagram for a couple of years. It had been on Team Canada in the World Photographic Cup. It had won many awards. It had been all over the place. And I put it on foundation and I get a notice saying, this has been deemed objectionable. We've taken it down and you'll have to burn it if you want it back. And there was another piece, similar story. It was called hashtag Meet Too. It was like a woman who was covered in blood and like pieces of her were kind of missing. So yeah, that one was a little bit more graphic, but idea being like, you know, women, but also like, you know, like being seen as meat and we are meat. And like, what does that kind of mean? So it was feminism. It was animal rights. Anyway, so the two of those both got taken down and, I was like super shocked, but also I had 300 friends on Twitter. Like I didn't know anybody. So I just took the email that they sent me. I put it on Twitter along with like the images, their awards, whatever. And was like, what? I didn't think this was going to happen in this space. Like maybe if this happened on Instagram, okay. But like Web3, I'm pretty sure like Steve-O was having sex on the front page of Foundation that week. So I'm like, how is this a problem? So anyway, I put it up and it went like, I think I had 900 followers by the end of the day. I like tripled my follower count. People were like, if you don't reinstate her, you're dead to me, Foundation. And they did, right? They sent me like a really rude letter. Like, what did they say? They said, thank you for your something note. Like, it was just like, it was passive aggressive. So I was like, oh, I'm staying on Tezos. I mean, I was always going to do both, but you know, it took me a few years to forgive Foundation only because I feel like their team has changed. So anyway, I got over it eventually, but it did take a while.
I mean, it's also testament to just how much community-driven momentum and pressure can actually force the platform to sort of change its ruling on something. So in a weird way, it was also just this nice allegory for what collective action can look like in a decentralized space as well. So I think there's a moral in there for the platform builders themselves. And I think it's a powerful lesson. To turn the conversation slightly into more recent times, you know, we were just coming out of, or at least hopefully continuing to come out of, what was a long bear market cycle for many. It was a challenge for people on all levels. So I wanted to understand, you know, what were you working on during this time? And what was the thing that sort of kept your feet firmly planted in this space? Because there were many that didn't last the last couple of years. There are many that stepped out. So what kept you here?
I think what kept me here, aside from like the initial intro where I was like, oh, we're going to get rich, wag me. And then I was like, oh, not really. You know, I didn't come to Tezos because I thought I was going to get rich. I just went there because I was like, this feels like a normal store and this makes sense to me and these prices make sense to me and I can afford this. So, yeah, I guess I never really understood why people would want to leave. Cause I'm like, I've met so many cool people. All my favorite people on earth are in Web3 now. Like my best friends are here. I get so much inspiration from seeing all of the artwork, learning from artists from other disciplines who I really had never, you know, interacted with much before. I was very much in the photographer community. That was it. And like just incredible opportunities that have come my way. Like, this month I have a piece being exhibited in the Albuquerque Museum of all places, because of a friend that I met in a Tezos room, who happens to be on the board there. So, you know, like so many amazing things have happened. I know the bear has been hard on people, but honestly for me, what it did was it made the whole space feel more like the chill place that I have found in Tezos to begin with. It got rid of so much of the trash and just like the hype and like all the stuff that I hated just kind of left. I'm sure it, you know, it will come back. It's already coming back a little bit with all these coin things that are happening, whatever. But for me, I'm like, I'm here for the art. I'm here for the people, the friends. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Even if there was no money to be made here whatsoever, I would still be hanging out here. Maybe not as much, but I'd still be hanging out here because, like, why would I leave? This is like the best hobby possible.
So what did you, you know, when all the activity sort of died down, a lot of members left, the space was a lot quieter. What did you busy yourself with within the space itself?
What did I do? I mean, I'm always making art, even if I'm not minting it, I'm always making it. You know, building relationships, maybe not like intentionally, I wasn't like, I'm going to make all these friends. It just sort of happens, right? Always like keeping connected. I've gone to a lot of events. I did an event last year in New York, with the help of Tezos. That was super fun. What else have I done? I don't know. I feel like I'm so busy all the time. I've done a lot. I think I've done a lot in terms of like my own art growth. And then I think I've done a lot in terms of contributing to the community and kind of building here as well. So yeah, I kind of enjoy the slowdown. It gives people more time to dig in a bit more and not feel like you're, you know, going in 1,000 different directions all the time.
And given you just mentioned your event last year in New York, I know you've got another one that's coming up. So can you tell us more about that event and what you have planned?
So last year when I was in New York, I did an event, and afterwards I was speaking to some of the people at Tezos, and I told them next year I want to do the event at Loom, which is this incredible immersive space where you walk in and you're just wowed by art, this, you know, all over the walls, not confined to a little screen. You know, like an experience, a true digital experience, as opposed to like just a bunch of TV screens, like something really dramatic, impactful. So that's what I wanted, and that's what I'm doing. So yeah, I got Loom for April 2nd, and we'll be there from 2 to 11. We'll be displaying a lot of artwork. So we have like kind of some main stage, I guess, like exhibits happening, and then a lot around that as well. So, I guess you could say like Graphite Method, Lawrence Fuller Graphite Method are probably like headliners. They'll be there for 2 hours, doing a performance, presenting their artwork. You know, people can come and meet them, and that'll be super great. Andressa Ferletti, who has been in Tezos since the beginning, and has done a lot in the community, is also an amazing performance artist who lives in New York. And she performed at the event last year. And this year she's going to perform again, a different performance, and we'll be surrounded by her other artwork as that's happening. So there'll be an hour for her. We're going to have like a community panel. So we've got some great speakers who will be there, talking about what's going on in the ecosystem right now in the art community. And while that's happening, we'll be displaying, art from the community kind of all around us, which will be awesome. And then, we've got Bloom, which is a really incredible group of artists that a lot of people are familiar with. That includes Jenny Pisanen, who's been on Tezos for quite a while. And they'll be putting together something, and Dolce Pagana, who's also really awesome. So they'll kind of be in the main area. And then we've got like Verse coming. I'm not sure if they're going to be performing or not. It depends if they're going to be there. That's still up in the air. I have Obscura curating something on Tezos. They've never done anything with Tezos before, so I think that that's really exciting. Lawrence and Vincent will be curating. And yeah, it's going to be a fantastic show.
It sounds like a massive showcase of Tezos artists are all coming into one place. And I think that's incredible. Is there an overarching theme or sort of this curatorial lens that's guiding, not necessarily who's involved in the show, but the art pieces that are going to be presented? Or is it just like a broad showcase of some of the most amazing art that's available on Tezos?
Well, if I'd had a year in advance, then I could have told all the artists, make something for this thing, but that was not the case. It was much shorter notice than that. So some people will be creating for it. Some people will be showing pieces that have already been there. And yeah, there isn't really an overarching theme. There are different themes within, so like Lawrence and Vincent's curation is called something beauty, fine beauty, or that's terrible. I would read it off my phone, but I'm blind right now. So forgive me, Lawrence, but yeah. So like he has a theme and different groups might have themes. Obscura hasn't announced theirs yet. So I don't even know what they're doing, but because of like the scope of this, it's very much community driven where I'm like, okay, this group, Verse, here are four screens. You guys can do whatever you want with them. Have fun. You know, that's kind of how it's going this year. I think if this is something we were to do again and maybe was able to, you know, get approval for that in a longer, you know, have like a longer lead up time, then it is something that we could theme and make it, you know, really spectacular. But for the first year, I think it's going to be great. And I mean, in reality, like people just want to go meet each other and like having your artwork exhibited in New York for so many people is like such a thrilling experience. And then hopefully we'll be bringing in people who don't normally do things on Tezos. That's definitely the goal. We want to show people like Tezos is not the dollar store. We have incredible art there, just as good as anywhere else, maybe better. Come see, come hang out with us. We're awesome. And then they just get addicted.
And where can people find more information about the event? So if anyone's looking to attend, where should they go learn more?
Well, there's a bunch of different places. You can go to my Twitter if you can find me. I'm VWestPhoto_MB. Sometimes I'm on a search band though, so I don't always pop up. If you can't find me, you can go to like Lawrence Fuller's profile. You can go to Leslie Spurlock's profile. Like a lot of people in the community are sharing and posting it. We're on Eventbrite. There's also a ticket on Object. If you go to Object, and you just type in Victoria West, I'll show up there and you'll see a stellar ticket that you can just grab for basically for free. It's like 0.01. And it has all the information on that. And, yeah, I think Pranoia is always sharing them too. So Twitter mainly, but yeah, it is on Eventbrite as well.
So you really can't miss it. People will be able to find it if they choose to look for it, which is awesome. And it sounds like a really exciting event. And I also like that it's sort of following this trend that, you know, despite the bear market and all of this activity dying down online or quietening down online, there were so many more physical meetups that really kept the community close to one another. And I think that was actually quite a beautiful thing, because I think so many of us get entrenched with the fact that this is a digital space and we tend to hide behind our computers in our living rooms rather than realize that we do have the opportunity to meet and interact with the people who are creating this awesome work. Now, you know, given we're sort of on the cusp of this new market cycle, and given your vantage point, you know, like as I mentioned earlier, you host the show Tez Talk. You also have this big picture view of, you know, who's operating in the ecosystem, what everyone's working on, and the sentiments that are driving this community. So I want to ask, you know, what your take on all of that is, and if there was, you know, one key opportunity you think the Tezos community can really ride in this next cycle, what do you think that might be?
One key opportunity. Well, I think with Tezos, it's like, in a way, we're almost immune to like the outside forces because we've never really been part of it. Like we're kind of this weird case that's like on its own. So for example, right now, everybody's all hyped over Solana and that's great. But like people are still going to come back to Tezos because that's where their art collections are. And that's where, you know, they've minted a lot of their work and that's where they want to buy things. So it's sort of like I think Tezos has just like consistently organically grown, and it will probably continue to do so in like a sustainable kind of way. So I think there was a bit of anger in the community. And I think that's fading now. And hopefully,
what do you think was driving the anger in particular?
Well, Tezpol.
Which, yeah, was a very bizarre moment where I think the community really, as much as it infuriated them, managed to find the humor in it all, which I thought was quite a wonderful thing. I think it was so true to the Tezos people that they would find this funny and just decide to laugh this off. But I can understand why there was a lot of frustration, because it didn't do justice to the artist's work that were being presented at Art Basel Miami, of all places.
It's an interesting situation because there are no other blockchains that have like a group of people or a company or whatever that are like putting on, like ETH doesn't put on events. They don't put on art events. They don't put on community events, right? Like nobody's going to be mad at ETH. They might be mad at individuals within ETH, but they don't get mad at ETH. And it's like when these companies do things that the people don't like, people like associate that with the entire blockchain, which is like this kind of weird situation, because it's obviously not. Like Tezos is not a company. It's not, you know, one entity. So yeah, it's kind of weird how it is like that. Like, and I was in Miami, and I know it was a difficult, you know, space and whatever. There was lots of reasons, and there's a Tezpol everywhere. I tell you, there's literally a Tezpol at every event. There's not going to be a Tezpol at my event. I tried to get one, but it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to. I might put there's like a little pole downstairs. I might put a Tezo sticker on and be like, that's the Tezpol. But, it's kind of a strange one. So, I think that they tried to help, like they tried, and then they kind of got, you know, they stuck their necks out and they got their heads chopped off. It's kind of what happened. So yeah, it's a weird situation.
Yeah. I understand the notion of, obviously this is a non-sentient technology, but when people are emotional and they have many rights to be over that particular incident, they need a single point of blame that allows them to, I guess, channel that anger, channel that frustration. And it was, you know, the abstract notion of people who were behind it all sort of things, or like the Wizard of Oz that sort of created this entire thing without realizing that this was, you know, a joint effort. There were things that could have been handled across an entire chain of decision making. But there probably wasn't one single point of failure in that exercise or in that experience. But, you know, as I said, the community sort of took it in stride, made light of it, turned it into its own meme, and let that sort of carry the way. And I think someone even created a Tezpol token at one point. So again, it was testament to like, yeah, this playful attitude that sort of guided the community through what was essentially a bit of a stressful time. But, you know, with that being said, there are naturally improvement areas and areas of learning that the Tezos community can really pick up from experiences like that. So what are some of the challenges that you think this community still needs to overcome as an ecosystem? And where do you think we can get started with it?
It's a tough question. Like, The community, I think really the community needs to feel prioritized. I think that's the biggest issue, right? It's not that all the money has to go, like it's not that we need more money. It's not even that. It's like, I guess I feel like the Tezos and what is most active on Tezos has always been the art. It's the art community, right? There are other pieces, but it's like, I think the artists have always felt like that was sort of like, not prioritized. And I think that is shifting now. So there's a lot of opportunity in that, because Like you said earlier, you made a comment about how everyone thinks like the greatest dApp's going to bring you in or whatever. It's not. Like, what is going to make us win is going to be art, because it's just something that everybody gets. Like, not everybody cares about like the finance world. Like, you know, there's just like, there's a small amount of the population that's into that, but who doesn't like music? Who doesn't like art? Who doesn't like entertainment? Who doesn't like movies? Like, all of this stuff is just going to appeal to everyone. I think, you know, there is so much opportunity right now across this space. Tezos, I think, makes a lot of sense just because it's so easy to use and it's cheap. Like, again, it's the same reason why I keep using it. Like, you know, I don't work for Tezos. I don't get paid to promote them. Like, I just am here because I like using it. Even if I'm mad at them, I still like using it. Right? Like, it doesn't matter. So yeah, I mean, there's opportunity, and there's opportunity for, I think, a lot of growth. Like, Tezos is earlier than a lot of the other chains, right? So sometimes it's good to be a big fish in a little pond, than being a little fish in a huge pond. So it's easier to get to know everybody here. It's easier to make connections here. It's easier to grow here. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more opportunity here for people to really build from the ground up and have that sort of grassroots momentum that I think people often tend to underestimate. People want sort of like the fast track, like, how do I get from the ground to the top of the tower as fast as possible, especially in the crypto space, because it's so fast moving. And there is this, like, this competitive driver behind a lot of it that sometimes makes for not the most pleasant of environments. But I think what's always been very positive about Tezos is that the community is always extremely supportive. I've not seen the levels of support elsewhere that I've seen amongst the Tezos community, particularly with respect to artists and just the championing of each other's work and the promotion of each other's work. So I think it makes for an exciting year ahead, especially if you, as you say, there is this refocusing or this reprioritizing of attention to the art space, because it is a vehicle for culture. And, you know, our digital environment is another area where culture is going to be very, very critical. It's going to be very important. So seeing how that all plays out, I think is going to be a curious thing. Like, I'm very curious to see how that goes. Before I let you go, I know we've already spoke about the New York event, but I'd like to ask, you know, what else you have planned, or if there's any other announcements or things that you'd like to share or perspectives you'd like to underline before we split ways.
Well, with New York, at the moment there are two open calls running, but there's going to be another one. Very last minute, I think Obscura is going to do over the weekend. So yeah, a lot of announcements, in terms of who's going to be involved, who's being curated, all of that will be coming very soon, because we're only 2 weeks out, actually. We're exactly 2 weeks away. So yeah, it's going to be a busy couple of weeks. I'm hoping, I don't know if I should say, well, there is potentially a generative project coming from me and Lawrence, and Graphite Method, which is Vincent, maybe, debuting on FX Hash as one of their first curated drops. So that's exciting. I don't know if it's like 100%. This is something new that's happening, but either way, it'll be on Tezos, and, we'll be showcasing it in New York. And I think that's about it. I don't really have anything else I wanted to add.
So plenty to kind of keep their eyes peeled for. And I like the idea that, you know, sometimes these unconfirmed things mean that people need to pay that extra level of attention just to see whether it pans out or what changes over the course of the near future. But Victoria, thank you so much for your perspectives. I think it's always great to connect with someone who's so vocal and active within the community. I think you have a very unique position, and I think this show sounds like it's going to be amazing. I'm annoyed that I won't be there to witness it myself, but I'm sure I'll be able to stalk from afar on Twitter. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. And we definitely want everybody who isn't able to make it to be included. So we're going to have streaming, like live Twitter. People are going to be able to check out what's going on. And we're going to try to cover all of our bases. So you'll be able to be there, you know, in some type of way, as long as you're fine with being, well, I guess for you, it could be like 8 a.m. We'll just be getting started.
That's manageable. I think I can make that work.
Yeah. So yeah, everyone can tune in, and we'll have Kevin Morabi will be live streaming. He did a great job last year. So yeah, we'll be on Twitter. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate the time, and hopefully we'll get to meet in the future, IRL.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, and we will speak soon.